Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag. Rambana & Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana & Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
More restrictions for Florida voters now appear almost inevitable.
Your Republican voters are going to get caught in this mess and be aggravated. The Democratic voters will be caught in this mess and be aggravated. The independent voters, the seniors.
Also tonight, the Florida legislature draws closer to restraining social media companies' ability to police their content.
Conflict of law between the Communications Decency Act and the First Amendment, these bills are dead in the water.
We'll also get the latest on the legislature's drive to ensure local governments don't make gas stations illegal, and we'll chat with one of the Florida Capitol's most experienced reporters. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the middle of the final week of the 2021 Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. Florida could become the latest state to revamp its election laws in the wake of the 2020 election. Lynn Hatter reports the legislation follows disproven claims of voter fraud by former President Donald Trump in states other than Florida.
Florida boasted a largely issue-free election last year. Democratic State Representative Tracy Davis asks, why fix what's not broken?
This bill, this amendment, is a slap in the supervisors of elections faces after an election that you say, we say, was one of the best we've had.
The plan before lawmakers will require ballot drop boxes be monitored 24 hours a day. It would restrict who can drop off a ballot for someone else and allow only local elections officials to distribute food and water to people within 150 feet of a voting site. It also creates new language around voter identification and signature matching. House bill sponsor Republican Representative Blaise Ingoglia.
We have guardrails on in-person voting, but we have zero guardrails on vote by mail. All we're doing is putting guardrails. We are not restricting anyone's access to the ballot.
The sponsor of this bill refers to these changes as guardrails. I refer to these changes as hurdles or barriers for people to deliver their vote.
That's Weston Democrat Representative Robin Bartleman. The proposal is coming over the opposition of local supervisors of elections who have opposed several requirements of the bill, such as language requiring voters to request mail-in ballots each election instead of every other year, and new rules around how ballots are counted and audited, an issue that would generate more paperwork and possibly long lines. Another point of contention, how to address shadow candidates from spoiling elections, an issue that emerged last cycle. The language was part of an earlier draft of the bill, but was stricken from the most recent one to the disappointment of Democratic Representative Geraldine Thompson.
Please remember, the voters are looking, the voters are listening, and they can't hear what you say because they see what you do.
Though Florida's measure is less restrictive than what's been approved in other states, Jacksonville Senator Audrey Gibson remains suspicious of Republicans' intent.
Since voting is a right, why would we as a state attempt to reduce the right of a person to exercise their right to vote and in the manner in which they decide to vote?
Republican Senator and state GOP Chairman Joe Gruters has called the changes modest.
This does nothing to suppress the vote. It does nothing to restrict the vote. What we're trying to do is make sure that we preserve our sacred duty and right of having every vote count.
Georgia, Arizona, Florida, Texas, Michigan, and New Hampshire all saw bills introduced to change election laws following the results of the 2020 cycle. I'm Len Hatter.
The Florida legislature is getting closer to passing a measure that would place checks on how social media companies police their platforms. Both chambers have passed slightly different versions of the bill. Valerie Crowder reports the GOP-backed bill has divided members along party lines, and even legal experts don't totally agree on how well the measure would stand up in court if it becomes law.
Social media companies serve users across the country and around the world. The U.S. Constitution gives Congress the authority to regulate the exchanges of people, goods, services, and intellectual property among the 50 states and with foreign nations. Florida First Amendment Foundation President Pamela Marsh says that's why she believes Florida's attempt to regulate an online business is futile.
The Commerce Clause is very broadly interpreted such that any interstate commerce is exclusively federal. You think of banking, that's interstate commerce, or trucking, that's interstate commerce. And it's exclusively falls within federal lawmaking parameters. So when states try to regulate those interstate businesses, they fall into trouble.
Marsh expressed doubt the measure would ever make it out of the legislature alive in a February interview.
Regulating them like this, penalizing them like this, subjecting them to liability only in Florida when they're not liable in the rest of the country. I think between the Commerce Clause, the Supremacy Clause, the conflict of law between the Communications Decency Act and the First Amendment, these bills are dead in the water.
Tampa-based attorney Richard Lawson served in the state attorney general's office's Consumer Protection Division. He says other states have tried to regulate companies in a similar way.
Several years ago, California enacted its own privacy statute so that any company that was marketing or doing heavy business with a heavy amount of California consumers had to follow various procedures regarding how they used consumer data and how they made consumer data available to the consumer and gave the consumers options as to how to access and limit the use of it.
Lawson says the California law ultimately had a nationwide effect, and that's something GOP Florida lawmakers are counting on with the social media bill. Many have called on Congress to act on the issue. North Fort Myers Republican Representative Spencer Roach explained state legislative action is one way to increase pressure on the federal government.
Yes, this bill is going to be challenged in court, no doubt. This may get elevated to the Supreme Court. This may be the impetus that forces the U.S. Supreme Court to make a decision and Congress to act. And I think that's our job here.
The measure was introduced soon after Twitter banned former President Donald Trump from the platform. South Florida Democratic Representative Dan Daley says the president refused to follow the company's guidelines, and in his view, the platform made the right decision.
If you declare members a free and fair election stolen, I'm sorry. You should be deplatformed. If you talk about gross voter fraud, which, by the way, there's no record of, you should be deplatformed. If you post and host a panel of experts who question the legitimacy and call into question COVID and the 500,000 people who have died as a result in this very building, you should be deplatformed.
Daley was alluding to YouTube's decision to remove Governor Ron DeSantis's recent video discussing pandemic-related policy with a panel of doctors. One of the doctors, who's not an epidemiologist, said that children need not wear masks to effectively curb the coronavirus spread. Daley also listed several issues lawmakers have neglected while focusing on highly politicized topics such as social media censorship.
Expanding Medicaid, meaningful criminal justice reform, addressing the expensive prison healthcare crisis, providing direct relief payments to small businesses impacted by COVID, reasonable gun reform, providing a solution to the affordable housing crisis that we all agree exists. The list goes on, and yet here we sit debating this bill.
Still, several lawmakers say constituents are very much concerned about the issue. South Florida Democratic Representative Anika Omfroy was the only member of her party to vote yes on the bill. She says she's heard from constituents who were censored without explanation. Onfroy says she's also had trouble posting content to social media without knowing why.
They shadowed me. I couldn't make a post. It wasn't until I made my way into the Florida house and actually had a contact at Facebook that I got it so that I could post things. Just doing a post for a farm share would get blocked. Just making a post about a congratulations to someone who did some good work in my community would get blocked.
A House version of the bill would impose tougher penalties for censoring political candidates than a measure passed in the Senate. Both chambers must reach an agreement for the bill to reach Governor Ron DeSantis. I'm Valerie Crowder.
Environmentalists are hoping Governor Ron DeSantis vetoes a proposal that would stop local governments from banning or restricting what fuels utilities can use. They fear it could threaten local clean energy plans, as we hear from Robbie Gaffney.
Zach Cosner with the environmentalist group Florida Conservation Voters says the measure has problematic language. It bans local governments from taking any action that restricts or has the effect of restricting the fuels utilities can use. Instead, that power would be preempted to the state. Cosner questions what the effect of restricting means.
Does a gasoline tax count as a policy that would have an effect of restricting? Because a lot of municipalities use local gasoline taxes to shore up their infrastructure budgets.
Cosner expects lawsuits to crop up because he says the proposal's language is unclear, where local government's power ends and the state's begins. Cosner says that may steer some local governments away from making clean energy commitments.
Theoretically, a goal to transition to 100% renewable energy citywide excludes fossil fuels, certain types of fuel. And so it really... It was already questionable whether or not cities would have the capacity under current laws at the state level fully transition to 100% renewable energy. But now it's quite clear that ultimately they can't. They cannot control for the use of fossil fuels within their jurisdictions.
Palm Coast Republican Representative Travis Hudson sponsored the Senate version of the proposal. He says it's not meant to do away with local government's clean energy plans. Rather, it's meant to stop them from banning natural gas.
You can be progressive moving forward with new clean energy, but you can't be regressive and ban the energies that are currently in place.
Cosner says that means places can still incentivize renewable energy developments, but says it strips local governments from being able to transition fully to renewable energy.
It doesn't completely take away options that locals have on the table, but it really severely curtails the slate of options municipalities have available to them.
Cosner hopes DeSantis will veto the proposal, as does Susan Glickman, Florida director of the Southern Alliance of Clean Energy.
The governor has a decision to make, and that's whether he wants to weigh in on the side of the people of the state of Florida or of the polluters who want to lock in an increasing amount of gas infrastructure.
Glickman says the proposal runs against Republican-led efforts to address the impacts of sea level rise. She says locking in natural gas infrastructure causes greenhouse gas emissions, which in turn will make climate change worse.
And we can't adapt our way out of climate change, so we don't want to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to adapt to sea level rise while we're simultaneously making the problem worse by locking in all this gas infrastructure that we will be saddled with for decades.
One Republican supporter of the bill, Palatka Republican Representative Bobby Payne, rebuked that argument.
There's a soundbite out there that says we are responsible for climate change. I don't accept that premise. Climate change has been going on since the beginning of time. You can go to Colorado and look at the rivers and the lakes and see the stratification and the rock layers of water ebbing and flowing. Climate change has been going on forever. The amount of impact we have as humans on climate change is infinitesimal.
Under the measure, local governments that own or operate and directly control their utilities can still take actions to regulate that utility. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
On Capitol Report, Derek Hamm with News Service of Florida joins us as we head towards the final hours of this year's session, not counting, of course, the special session that's still to come, and we might talk about that too. But Derek, just overall, you've been covering a lot of issues this particular go-around, and as we head into the last couple days of session here, your overall impressions, beyond the fact this had to be the weirdest session that any of us can remember.
Right. And with the Capitol being almost deserted, the Senate not allowing people into the building, people having to testify from the Civic Center, the House having limited attendance at committee meetings, and people would have to sign up at least 3 hours beforehand to make get a seat in the committee meetings. And there are frequently lobbyists told me that they tried to sign up and they were too late. So there has been this sense of sort of unrestrained power by the Republicans. I mean, that's how I would call it, kind of where they may have done the same actions. They may have taken the same actions. They may have taken the same votes. They may have pushed through the same legislation. But they've done it in what has seemed to be a vacuum. I can tell you that the anti-protest bill that was passed earlier this month that the governor signed already into law, I can imagine, and so can you, that the halls would have been lined with people with signs in their hands. They would have been chanting. They would have been protesting inside the Capitol in opposition to that bill. So that's just one of the measures that the Republicans who control both chambers have pushed forward. They've done a number of, I've lost track of them, but I think maybe about a dozen or more preemption bills, which is, in case our listeners need to be informed of that wonky term, that is where the state government restricts local government officials from passing rules or ordinances regarding certain things, such as gas station regulations. Now, that's a new one, such as the one that's been on the books for a long time has been guns, the regulation of firearms. So there have been the preemption bills. There's right now a bill bouncing back and forth between the House and Senate that would make a number of changes to voting, vote by mail and drop boxes. And these are really what our most people would call red meat Republican priorities that we're seeing in similar pieces of legislation in GOP-led state houses around the country.
Yeah, it seemed like there was a lot of communication amongst the various Republican-led legislatures as to, well, what are you going to do this year? I don't know. What are you going to do this year? And then they wind up doing pretty much the same thing this year.
They're doing what they always do. The Republicans ram through things that they want that are priorities for them, and the Democrats don't really have the numbers to try to stop them from passing bills that they oppose. So they literally sit in the back, on the back rows in both chambers. They are the voice of the opposition.
Not a very loud voice, though, as you already pointed out, Dara. One other thing, though, as of just a few minutes past noon on Tuesday of this week, they actually came to a conclusion about $101.5 billion agreement on the budget. It then goes into the mandatory 72-hour cooling off period. But when we began this session, the talk was of fiscal austerity. Because of COVID, we did not have the revenues coming in, and suddenly you got billions of dollars of federal largesse that is being rained on the states. We probably couldn't have balanced the budget without that help from Washington, though.
What's interesting about that is they are still making some cuts, because these This is a one-time infusion and not one day infusion, but this is limited funds that will be a one-shot in the arm, if you will, from the federal government to help states recover from the coronavirus pandemic, from the economic fallout from that. But the state legislators Republican leaders, they don't like big government. And they don't necessarily want to have a whole boatload more money to spend. So they are still moving ahead with making some cuts, including some cuts to, I think, Bright Futures, the school book, the books for Bright Futures scholarship students. I forget the amount there, but it's several hundred dollars per student that they've cut. So while we're seeing a boost in spending this year, the long-term view is that the state needs to tighten its belt and spend these dollars on one-time infrastructure things like water projects for the rivers and springs and the Everglades, things such as that. The other thing that the legislature did was they nixed what was a priority of a former Senate president, Bill Galvano, the MCORs, those transportation corridors that were going to what the critics, environmentalists called roads to nowhere. That was a multi-billion dollar long-term project that will no longer take place under the changes they approved this year.
Governor Ron DeSantis inking a deal with the Seminole tribe for a revival of that moribund compact deal on gaming. So we will see these guys again in just a couple weeks, Dara.
That's right. On May 17th, I don't know how long it will last, but there will be a special session on, they call it gaming, they don't call it gambling. So there will be a special session on a $2.5 billion deal. It's a $2.5 billion over 5 years. That's what the 30-year agreement that the governor and the Seminole Tribe of Florida chairman, Marcellus Osceola, signed on Friday. That requires legislative ratification. And the problem with that is that accompanying that compact legislation will have to be some implementing and enacting legislation, and that's where things get sticky, because all of the state's paramutual operators, the card rooms, the horse tracks, the highlight front ends, what used to be dog tracks, they don't have run dogs any longer, but these efforts have failed in the past few years because everybody wants something and they don't want the other guy to have something else. So these are very complicated deals to put together, and getting everybody happy and on board is going to be a real treat in two and a half weeks.
We will be back and watch the treat, and we'll also be reading what you say about it in your coverage as you continue following the Florida legislature on behalf of the News Service of Florida. Dara Camp, thanks for joining us here on Capitol Report.
It was my pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, debate in the Florida House was spirited today on a measure that puts new rules in place for how government should respond to public health emergencies. Regan McCarthy reports the discussion centered on what some are calling vaccine discrimination.
Deciding whether to get the coronavirus vaccine could be more than a personal choice. Lithia Republican Representative Mike Beltran says businesses and employers are weighing in on whether people should get vaccinated.
I was reading my hometown paper yesterday evening, and I came across two interesting headlines. I'm going to read them to you. One of them says, Florida tax collector orders workers to vaccinate or risk being fired. The other headline said, private Florida school won't employ vaccinated teachers. So we got people discriminating against you if you're vaccinated. We have people discriminating against you if you're not vaccinated.
Beltran, who says he and his wife have received the vaccine, thinks whether someone decides to get vaccinated should be up to them. He says he doesn't support the idea of businesses requiring vaccine passports before someone can go inside.
What kind of business do you want to go into where you have to show an internal passport in order to get into that business? Every time you go to Publix, every time you go to a restaurant.
Governor Ron DeSantis has also spoken out against the idea. He issued an order earlier this month that bars businesses from requiring proof of vaccination for entry. Similar legislation is included in a measure moving through the legislature. Ormond Beach Republican Representative Tom Leake is carrying the bill. He says it's understandable that someone might be unsure about getting vaccinated. And he points out vaccine hesitancy is more common among minorities. During a discussion on the House floor, he compared the move to bar businesses from asking for a person's vaccine status with anti-discrimination protections in current law.
It was not anti-freedom nor wrong when the state stepped in and said employers could not discriminate on the basis of race. It was not anti-freedom nor wrong when the state told landlords they could not discriminate against people with disabilities. And it is right today for the state to tell businesses that they may not enact policies that unfairly and disparately discriminate against our minority populations.
But North Bay Village Democratic Representative Michael Grieco says the measure, as it's written now, doesn't protect people who have been vaccinated.
And it's true. This bill will protect the unvaccinated, but it will allow you to discriminate against people who have been vaccinated. And it's time to start thinking about policy and start thinking about science and less about politics.
While much of the House floor debate focused on whether someone's vaccine status should impact their ability to work or enter a business, that's just one part of a much broader bill. The measure also includes language that would let the governor override a local government's emergency order if the governor doesn't agree with it. It would also limit how long emergency orders can be in place, and would, in many cases, require both state and local governments to provide explanations for their orders. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Valerie Crowder, Robbie Gaffney, Blaise Gainey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Please join us every evening at this time throughout the 2021 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag. Rambana & Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana & Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flafl-cio.org.